and I hope you have an excellent evening. Join me again for the Arts Report next week. I will have a new theme song for you, along with all the other arts stuff that you've come to expect. All right, so take it easy, and I will see you on the flip side.
Pool in the middle of the night, white plastic bags, bodyguards. We wander through our Hollywood, the perfect speak of the common good.
Fantasia, Part 2, San Francisco, by Kari Jackson, a.k.a. 6 is 9. I've never lived in San Francisco, but I believe in the song. I still believe I'd find gentle there. I still believe that summertime would be loving there. I believe in people that loved everything. Yeah, I'm a hippie. To my young, darkening eyes, hippies changed the world. I doubt we'd have survived the 60s without them, with legalized hatred screaming us in the face. We needed to hear them outside our windows, holding their technicolor hearts over their heads and blasting them like boomboxes. We needed to see we were free to say anything. They wrote the Book of Right On as a precursor to Yes, We Can. While Kent State fell to National Guard bullets, they planted flowers and rifles. They planted seeds in my rifle. When my trigger finger gets happy, another petal breaks out, and I'm ready to lead a drive-by planting, firing gardens through windows, heart-cracked cynics dodging for their lives while innocent bystanders find themselves laughing, roses from their throats. Yes, I'm a hippie, but my hippie doesn't wear tie-dye, doesn't use peyote for his visions. My hippie dresses in jeans, dreams in a head wrap, one hip flowing to Sufjan Stevens, the other rocking to M.I.A. My heart flies like paper, rise high like planes, sending love letters, kisses all over your name. My hugs are free, but my trust is not. If I played my heart overhead like a boombox, you'd hear a mix of Stockholm Syndrome and The Mercy Seat, Kanye and Damien Rice, guitars ripping like 808, still crawling out of heartbreak. And if you ask me where she is, I'd say San Francisco. She sends me messages through the dandelions along my sidewalk, my eyes reading the words, my ears sensing the excitement pitch, the scent hitting me like truth walking in tardy, fresh from the hallway, the city. She says how warm it is, how the smiles feel just right, how everyone wakes up singing it's not too late. I may never live there, but I know I can't even visit till I can pull an orchid from this rifle and stick it in my hair. My trigger finger is shaking, this flower child's growing up, I don't remember how to get there. But then I see you, and you. In a single day, I saw one couple kissing on a train, another in the midnight cold waiting for one, heard two more friends getting married next year, another in Texas with spring. This could really happen. I see all of it, and each person's finger is pointing west without knowing you are guiding me back, taking this underground road, this yellow brick gravel, this chain link of moments with more potential than smoke-filled mystery machines toward this natural vision of a new free in an old place, older than failure but just as scary, older than incense but just as burning, older than crosses but with just as much faith. It's always there, says the moon box. It's never too late, says the wind. I just need my trigger finger. I just need enough flowers to get in. Good evening. You are listening to Audio Text on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. In the background, a little bit of Belle and Sebastian from Storytelling. The song is called Freak. So, welcome back. I'm JC Peters. Nice to be back again on a Wednesday, just after 6 p.m. I'll come back to a little more of the poetry from Kari Jackson, a.k.a. Six is Nine. That chapbook just sort of fell into my lap. And I realized that Kari Jackson is actually from St. Paul, Minnesota, not from Canada. So I'm breaking the rules today on my Canadian writing show. But Canadians are also people from a lot of other places, and Kari has been here before, and this chapbook came through friends, so it still sort of feels like a local thing, and you gotta open your mind sometimes, can't be too rigid on the rules, right? But I'll be back with more Canadian stuff next week, so don't worry, and there's lots more Canadian local stuff to listen to on today's show, so don't get all freaked out or anything. It'll be okay. So today's show, before we get started on listening to some tracks from some recordings from some local spoken word events, I'll give you a couple of listings. There's not a hell of a lot going on in Vancouver this week. Sometimes it seems to be sort of feast or famine. There's a lot going on or nothing at all. And this is a bit of a poor week. But there are a couple of things happening. So if you want to get out off your butt and into listen to some poetry this week, this Sunday is September 6th. And is that this week? Thundering Word should be happening this week. Oh, maybe that was last week. I take it back. There's nothing happening on Sunday. You have to stay at home. But on Monday, you can come back out again to Café du Soleil. It's the Vancouver Poetry Slam, as always, but this is a particularly special Poetry Slam because it is the finals night. So the best poets of the season, the poets who won the Poetry Slam during the season of the summer, are going to be competing against each other to see who will win a chance to represent Vancouver in Berkeley, California for the individual World Poetry Slam playoffs. So there are going to be some really great poets there. It's going to be a phenomenal night at the Slam. There are a lot of really great people, myself included. I managed to get onto that list as well. So if you want to hear what kind of poetry I've got going on, please do come and check that out. Otherwise, I'm going to be playing some sample stuff from some of the people who will be competing, including Zacchaeus Jackson and Relevant and Fernando Reguero and a bunch of others. So we'll come back to that in just a minute. And that's it. That's the entire listings that I have for today. No, wait. I take it back. There's one more. I'm reading my sheet so badly. I apologize. I'm being such a rebel today. Tuesday, September 8th. So that's coming up next week at the Vancouver Public Library. Local author Carla Reiger is going to be reading from her suspense novel, The Change Artist. So that's going to be in the Peter Kay Room on Tuesday evening at the Vancouver Public Library. If you want more information about that, it's on the website, www.vpl.ca. The library has a lot of really good events happening most of the time. VancouverPoetryHouse.com also has a lot of really good events. So you can always keep up on this stuff yourself as well. There's always possibly something that I'm missing. But as far as I know, those are the only two things that you can do this week in terms of spoken word. So you can stay home and read, you know, some of the people that I introduce you to on the show, or just listen to archives of my show, Audio Text, which is really great. And you can do that. You can podcast my show from CITR.ca or jcpeters.ca, which is my website. So feel free to do that as well. Enough about me. Let's get back to some of these qualifiers that are going to be competing on Monday. So this first poem that I'm going to play for you is by Duncan Shields. This poem is called I Poem.
Introducing I Poem. With fast 3D metaphor technology, GPS similes, support for rhyme scheme features like Microsoft ABCB and the new Stanza store, I Poem puts even more features at your fingertips. Unlike the original iPoem, it combines three important points in one: a revolutionary political voice, a loudspeaker for the underdog, and a wireless broken heart. With rich HTML, email, and a trunk dialing web browser. This case has a revolutionary multi-touch interface. The iPoem is real-time and interactive, including musings, sonnets, observational reflection modifiers, and many ways to rail against the man. I love him. And iTunes. write stories of past love gone horribly wrong, display pictures of dead friends, and access Facebook. The iPoem is easily accessible, reprogrammable, and direct. It communicates with the world using the power of your voice. The iPoem makes what once was unique and difficult into something easily achievable by anyone who can afford it. More than a brand, it's an internal teleprompter for the soul, helping you express the rage and sadness in ways you didn't know you could articulate. It sets your verse free. It has the MSN vocabulary, the next-gen thesaurus, hands-free Wi-Fi, and mental PowerPoint. iPoem. It redefines what a poem can do again.
Ever thought about volunteering with Big Sisters? Maybe now is the time. Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland provides girls aged 7 to 17 with a champion, a mentor who's there to simply be their friend and cheer them on. Become a study buddy tutor and spend 1 hour a week helping your little sister learn to love school. Or become a Big Sister and spend 3 fun hours a week just hanging out with your little sister. If you're age 19 or older, please visit bigsisters.bc.ca to find out more. Maybe now is the time.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Indeed you are. So you heard Duncan Shields before that little break, and up next I'm going to be playing a piece by Joe McDonald, who you've not heard on this show before. He's quite a young poet who's just started out at the Vancouver Poetry Slam, and he's going to be competing this Monday as well. This piece is called Bronchitis.
This is dedicated to anyone who's ever had bronchitis. There's friction in my lungs. He surmised in seconds what took me weeks to survive. No, lie. You have, well, there's fluid in your lungs. Oh, that's interesting, doctor. See, because I've been waking up with this pulse, packing clothes for the homeless. And by the homeless, I mean my unease with my own ability to own shit. See, it leaves friction in my lungs. And some nights I can't fall back asleep. Because every good idea I breathe in, it ends up drowning. And I used to think that's because I had a doubt that blazed with both guns. And it turns out that's excess fluid built up in your lungs. I get anxious if I don't know when the next time I'll travel is. No, that's bronchitis. It's a friction in your lungs. Yeah, and sometimes the rest of your chest. Where every breath you breathe in, it's under duress. It's awkward, doctor, because I spent the better part of my life so far trying to hone that sense of wanderlust. To treat green lights like portents and leave people before I prove to them unimportant. To treat promises like they're fragile as orchids. To spend every night sleeping in different orchards. I fled relationships over this. And they left me with a sore throat and a raw chest. Fuck, if I just had this checked out earlier, I might be able to, you know, articulate with a stronger vocabulary. I'll never be comfortable with you, because I'll never be comfortable, because I've got bronchitis. Of the life. And amidst shifting cities twice, quitting university and losing my father, the overshadowing takeaway was always that rest belongs to sunshine and yuccas, things you only ever see in the interim between drowning seasons. But doctor, I need this rest. In these 3.5 weeks of coughing fits, I haven't fucking slept. He nods, but he doesn't see why it's so cataclysmic. He prescribes me amoxicillin like it won't make a miracle of difference. And so I return in 2 weeks. Doctor, the coughing fits are gone, but I still can't fall asleep. I still wake up with that pulse. I feel shaky on solid ground. The excess of fluids is gone. My good ideas still drown. I still can't find yuccas in a rainy season. I still leave people abruptly without any reason. I still leave my orchards come morning. I've grown wings and I don't feel comfortable soaring. I don't know if this bronchitis any longer, but there's still fucking friction in my lungs.
Bronchitis of the life. I'm sure you can relate to Joe McDonald on that one. I certainly can. This next piece that I'm going to play for you is by another young poet, Relevant, who's got a completely different style, but he's also really great and clever. So he'll also be competing this Monday at Café du Soleil.
What's happening, young blood? Not much, big brother. I just came here to say I'm ready. I want a joint. Sign me up. And what makes you think you're ready, youngin'? Well, I had enough of these pigs harassing harassing me, killing my friends. So give me a gun, I'ma find me a cop, kill him, and bring back his badge. Arm me, and I'll be your soldier. October 1966, Oakland, California. Huey Newton and Bobby Seale founded the Black Panthers for self-defense. They practiced militant self-defense of minority communities against the U.S. government. I'll raise my fist. I'll raise my fist against segregation. I'll raise my fist against discrimination. I'll raise my fist for little Bobby Hutton. I'll raise my fist for a united front end, a new world order. What do you do? What do you do when your blood boils from witnessing countless injustices aimed towards you and your loved ones? What do you do when you no longer believe in the teachings of Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr.'s We Shall Overcome? What do you do when you no longer believe in a peaceful revolution? When put in extreme circumstances, you'll understand why Malcolm said, by any means necessary as our only solution. Well, I was taught that sometimes if you want to get rid of the gun, you gotta pick one up. And a revolution doesn't start till you've been unjustly kicked down to the point where you had enough. And don't get it twisted, the Black Panthers run again, puffing out their chests just to look tough, but they were bad, job-ass mama jamas that played rough when the time called for the love of their people. They were the protectors, like lions meeting you at the gates of hell to protect the cubs from evil. They had enough of seeing their people bleed. What they decided their people need was someone to lead. And when they got organized, they did things like feed the little brothers and sisters, and then plant the seed into the brain that will one day flourish into a tree of education, where all people are treated equal, and there's no need for segregation. The federal government ran a major terrorist program to disrupt the ascent they started against communism in the 50s. The Black Panthers were the most viciously attacked, and at the time, they only had about 800 members in the 60s. The entire U.S. government focused more energy on destroying the Black Panthers than communism, which just goes to prove back then, the white man feared what he didn't understand. A prime example of that is them forcefully taking over native land and stealing from all of Africa's riches and enslaving their man. April 6, 1968, little Bobby Hutton. Police burned his house down, waited for him to run outside and shot him 10 times. He was only 17 years old. So I say, no. It's time for us to all stand up and be bold. It's time for us to all unite and scream no more to the top of our lungs. It's time for us to all unite and it's recognize the Black Panthers and have their accomplishments sung. So I ask you all to raise your fist. Raise your fist against segregation. Raise your fist against discrimination. Raise your fist for little Bobby Hutton. Raise your fist for a united front end, a new world order. But back to the story at hand. Big Brother reaches deep into his desk. Little man thinks he's about to take out a big gun. Instead, he takes out a stack of books. Little man says, are you kidding me? I thought you were supposed to arm me. Big Brother takes a second to look deeply into his eyes before he replies, I just did.
Yeah, that was relevant. This next piece is going to be by Antoinette, who is a poet who I think has been around for a little while, but who I first encountered relatively recently and was pretty blown away by what she was coming up with. So this is a piece from Antoinette.
Okay, well, this next piece is kind of from a work in progress. I'm entitling it Planning Tapestries of Coping Strategies and Bizarre Realities. Goes, hey, faggot! You fucking faggot! Oh my god, it's a fucking fag! Of course, I'm gonna go, where? What pops into my mind are two well-muscled naked men who happen to be hung like small ponies with what? Very balls deep up the other's bubble butt perfect ass. Goddamn fag. To be damned, and I've never even met the man. Of course, not to be outdone or intimidated, the tranny coping strategy might be to return with a reply of, fuck you, you fucking homo. You know what a homo is? Some straight guy doesn't know he's supposed to be a faggot. Human shield, because this can really piss the guy off. Especially if he's having homosexual fantasies and is in denial and has this overpowering urge to reaffirm his guyness by attacking and attempting to bam-bam the girly man. As if that's going to impress his friends, you know? What, you're going to beat up a real guy? You got to pick on the girly man? Oh my God, it's a no-win situation. You know, the man should never let him forget that for the rest of his life. But he that's it. I cut peanut butter curry, man. I know who you're talking about. Got beat up by the Gurdy Man. Now, it's a white boy, he's got his girlfriend, he's trying to humiliate you in front of his girlfriend. The comeback there might be, why is it always the guys with the biggest mouths got the littlest dicks? And then, watch him turn red as his girlfriend starts laughing at him. So, you know, many homophobes seem to think faggotism is contagious. The way they carry on screaming and screeching tires, you'd think all a faggot had to do was reach out and touch somebody for them to be infected with faggotism. Fag tech. You're a 19 now.
That was Antoinette. I'm going to play one more piece for you today by one of the poets who will be competing this Monday at Café du Soleil at the individual World Poetry Slam playoffs. This is Zacchaeus Jackson.
As a child, I can recall watching a bald eagle come plummeting down towards the rippling river surface with the sole purpose of pulling salmon from the current. Claws extended, wings tacked back, forming immaculate black jackknives. He dives. Survival of the fittest is the term we like to use, and I'm sure a lot of you assume that the fish lost. But that's just not the case, at least not this day, because at the age of 8, I saw the Lord of the Sky bite off more than he can chew. And if any of you have ever seen a 32-pound spring salmon bring a fully grown bald eagle all claws, piercing screams, and 5-foot wings slamming down beneath them watery depths, you learn to cheer for the underdog. Alicia Gadua never knew me from Adam. Complete strangers, related only through the endangered race of full-blooded Native Americans, we met in jail, and after arrogantly perusing my sketchbook, he respectfully asked if I would tat him. When I asked what he wanted, he simply said, wings. Well, what kind, I replied. Fuck if I care, as long as they fly. He had a child's mind and a wild man's spine, razor sharp street smarts, cause he grew up on the grind, stoned from the day that he first turned 9. A father at 15, but young offender by 12, perpetuating yet another generation of First Nations parents who can barely look after themselves. He was in jail for assaulting a cop. He said he saw smack his son's mom. Told me, broke the fucker's jaw and 3 ribs. And I believed the kid, because inside lots of liars tell hyper stories, but his voice remained calm and collected. That cat was mad introspective, and although I knew tattooed wings wouldn't help him reach his objective, still I elected to etch feathers of black ink into the arms and back of a man I distinctly knew to be much less angel than Icarus, more minotaur than Odysseus. And as if he could tell that his candle was lit at both ends, Elysiac's light, it was flickerless, which is so ridiculously indicative of his predicament, because you know, if God really exists and he even has a right hand, cats like Elysiac make up the wrist ligament, the same one that he used in 2002, twisting caps at Saskatchewan Cats, tried to jack up him and his crew. When he phoned me from remand, I said, man, we just got free and now you're back. What the hell's wrong with your head? He said, fuck Red Alert. Alberta Warrior's the only family that I ever knew. If your family was in trouble, what the fuck would you do? And you know, I can't really blame him at all, because if you was never raised, you can't fall. Alicia kept his head low to the ground, his eye on the ball, and that ball led him astray. And then it bounced itself around the lyrics of life until it led me to say the story of a child who was never taught the ways of how not to play with all the things that bring hurt. So I guess the best that I can hope for is that somewhere on a weight bench in a southern Saskatchewan jail, a man named Alicia Gadua is still trying to make his wings work.
Carrie, darling, Carrie when I cried. If I can't marry Carrie Brown, believe I'd rather die.
You have wandered into the folk oasis. Welcome to it.
Stop the world and let me on.
You are indeed listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
I've been trying to keep my mouth shut, baby. I've been trying to
Yes, 8 to 10 p.m. every Wednesday night. It's me, Val, hosting 2 hours of eclectic roots music. Folk Oasis.
We have just a couple of minutes left here on Audio Text on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver with me, your host, JC Peters. So, as promised, I'm coming back to a little bit more of the poetry by Kari Jackson, aka Six is Nine, who's from Minnesota, St. Paul. And part of the reason that I wanted to read some of this poetry was because of the little inscription that Kari Jackson wrote at the beginning of his chapbook, which I'm reading from. It's called Enough Flowers to Get In. And he writes, "Hi, thanks for giving me a bit of your time. I hope you enjoy the work. I picked pieces that I felt worked well on a page, but I have a suggestion. Read them silently if you will, but afterwards, whenever you feel at least shy or embarrassed, read them aloud. Feel the poems in your mouth. Read them to friends who hate poetry. Read them to poets. Give them some life. In the words of Mighty Mike McGee, I'd really like that." And I really like that, because that's sort of why I'm doing this show. I think poetry is great. For people who hate poetry, they just haven't heard enough of it, really. I think there's a lot of different, very different stuff out there. There's something for everyone's taste. And spoken word poetry is a little different from page poetry, and I always try to give you guys a little bit of both, just so that you can see that it's not actually as inaccessible as you might think, as you might have learned in high school, and that there's a lot of beauty there and a lot of stuff that's really accessible and relatable. So, that being said, Kari Jackson and I are, in a sense, on the same page, even though he may not be Canadian. So we're still a part of the same human community, which is the important thing, right? So this poem is called The Rain. Galileo was in love with God. He pursued her in the cosmos with blunt instruments hardly suited to peer into the gracious. I imagined he prayed through his telescope lens, waiting for a glimpse of breath on the glass, hoping to prove that the sun was just a breadcrumb to lead us back home. His was a harmony of faith and facts, mathematics with the sole purpose of encrypting lullabies. He pried them open, was teased with glimpses, and when the church inquired about his progress, he'd say, still praying. There was a time when science was a celebration of God, when there was more to the discussion than intelligent design and stem cells, when the blueprint of creation was just a classroom away. In high school biology, while we pinched ourselves to stay awake, I wished it had occurred to me to say, Mrs. Edmonds, tell me when you first witnessed the communion of photosynthesis and slipped into awe. Tell me when your microscope first revealed breath on the glass. I want to know when you knew this was more than pop quiz material, when you knew you were sharing the building blocks of ecstasy. This knowledge is not enough for me. I want to know if this is how you pray. It's common knowledge that playing little kids Mozart helps them feel smarter, so I wonder how many of their parents will tell them his mind was a playground of the unspeakable, that his harmonies were architecture of the highest order for the purpose of glorifying God. When they teach kids about Da Vinci, do they mention that the Last Supper was a model of geometry, linear perspective and proportion? When they teach of the earth orbiting the sun, do they mention that Galileo treated science as the left brain of God? I want to meet the physicist that teeters on the edge and dares God to prove him right. Show me the chemist that dreams of dying in water. I want to read the chapter where Mary tells her son, energy is neither created nor destroyed, but changes from one form to another. So go on, baby. I'll be with you if you promise to visit me in rainfall. I wonder what Mrs. Edmonds would tell me if I asked her about God. I imagine she'd blink and smile awkwardly. She'd tell me this isn't the place to discuss such things. Then maybe she'd smile softly and tell us how the grass glows when it rains. So that was a piece from Kari Jackson's chapbook, Enough Flowers to Get In. That's Kari Jackson, a.k.a. Six is Nine. This has been another episode of Audio Text with JC Peters. That's me, your host, on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Coming up next is Sam Squanch's Hideaway. And I'm going to leave you with another song by Belle and Sebastian called Fuck This Shit.